Maski Levetan, the Ezrahite. I will sing of the mercies of the Lord forever. With my mouth will I make known thy faithfulness to all generations. For I have said, mercy shall be built up forever. Thy faithfulness shalt thou establish in the very heavens. I have made a covenant with my chosen. I have sworn unto David, my servant, thy seed will I establish forever and build up thy throne to all generations. Now just stop there. There won't be the possibility of reading the psalm through, but you've all got used to the idea that you have to do this before you come, so that we can make the maximum use of the time on each occasion. This is a very long psalm, and it's a very wonderful one. It follows on from the psalm we were thinking of last night, Psalm 132, which is itself based on a historical incident in the life of David. It's drawing on the experience that's recorded for us in 2 Samuel chapter 7. These verses that we've read open with a title that I don't want to spend time on except for one word with which it opens, Maskil. And I'm sure that most of the older ones in the room this evening will know that this word really has to do with a psalm of instruction, and that the group of Maskil psalms, as they're found in this wonderful collection, are the kind of instruction that the Maskilim of Daniel chapter 11, that's the wise men that are there referred to, will be handling with that group that who will be drawn to the Lord and prepared for the coming of the Messiah in the future. So remember that the wise men of Daniel 11 are the Maskilim, and some of their best teaching material will be found in the Maskil Psalms. And this is one of those psalms, and perhaps the longest one that we have. I'm just going to touch here and there and pick out the main things that I believe will help us for tonight's subject. Now, verses 1 and 2 that we read are quite distinct from verses 3 and 4. And yet, there are words found in 1 and 2 that also reappear in verses 3 and 4. In verses 1 and 2, it's the psalmist doing the singing. Whereas in verses 3 and 4, it's the Lord providing the words. And it's this that we need. When the psalmist says, I will sing of the mercies of the Lord, it's quite obvious that here's someone that's thrilled with the mercies of the Lord as a subject. Now, we'll come to that in a minute. But in verse 3, when we have I now, once again the first person, I have made a covenant, this is not the psalmist. And we have to get used in those passages which are sometimes described as prophetic, and the Psalms almost a complete collection of such items. But when we are in these things, we have to trace, we have to follow who actually happens to be the speaker at the time. So we have four verses here which fall into two groups of two. The I in verses 1 and 2 is the psalmist, and he's going to sing us a hymn. And that hymn is going to commence in verse 5. You heard that, didn't you? That's right. I was talking about verses 1 to 4, but the hymn commences at verse 5. And verses 3 and 4 have to do with the covenant of the Lord and the words that he used. And you will find these drawn from 2 Samuel chapter 7. The great feature of this psalm is that it actually uses the word covenant, which is rather difficult to find in the historical circumstance itself, but that it is a covenant made with him, I'm sure none of us have any doubt. This is a comment, if you like, an expansion on the covenant made with David and his house that's recorded for us in 2 Samuel chapter 7. And what I want to say here is that these two verses are a repeat of the Lord's words to David directly, and that he is, in fact, going to build up his throne to all generations. And those two verses introduce to us not a hymn, but an actual revelation that David's God revealed to him. And that commences at verse 19. I'm talking about the oracle that was given to David is expanded from verse 19 of this psalm and onwards, round to about 37 or 8, depending on which particular breakup of verses you're looking at. And what I'm going to say here is that we have a wonderful way in which the Spirit of God already has subdivided the positive wonder of God's mercies, number one, as it's known cosmically, and number two, as it's known covenantally. Verses 1 and 2, 3 and 4. Whereas, when we go on from that, from verse 5 through to 15, we are in a hymn developing verses 1 and 2. Verses 16 to 19 form the bridge out of that subject into the next piece, which is the oracle expanded, the subject matter here, in brief, of verses 3 and 4. So when you come to these things and you sing them with gusto, to your hymnal, I believe, that you might have here, then please remember that when these things were sung, they were actually singing some of the richest theological truth and prophetic truth that's ever been penned. And one of the wonderful things about some of the best hymn books that are used amongst us is just that, that there is an intelligent understanding of the revelation of God, expressed in more modern words sometimes, but which when we sing, we mustn't merely be taken away with the music, though I do believe that the music has a very important part in conveying the truth, but as we sing it, we must be drinking in. Let me just give a little excerpt, and I hope I don't take too much time on this. We had 7 fellows came to us, and after we'd, in Jerusalem, and after they'd come from the Holy Lands Institute as postgrad theological students, and they asked if they could come along to this and to that and to the other, and eventually they came along to the Lord's Supper. And they'd never ever been in anything like this in their life, and they just sat there and listened and observed. But what I noticed was how, with gusto, they sang these hymns. And at the end of the session, 6 of these came around me like flies round or whatever. And having said that, there was one of these lads that was away in the corner, seemingly not interested in me at all. And when I finished chatting to these fellows, I went over to this lad, and he had the hymn book from which you've been singing tonight. And he was just turning the pages over as he was going through it like this and reading this. And he said, sir, well, we soon got that out of his vocabulary, but he said, sir, where can I get one of these hymn books? Now, I know numbers of assemblies that have decided that that's out of date now and we want to get on to something else, you see. And all I'm saying is this, and mind, there are even more intelligent hymn books and richer theologically by far than that one. But when we have them, let's remember what we have here is the poet at work with worship. And if we could only enter into the mainstream of that, I'm telling you, heaven would be delighted the more. So don't just sing, and don't just sing aloud, but sing of the mercies of the Lord forever. That's the hymn. And when you've done with that, well, get into the oracle and sing your way through that. And thank God that there is one coming who's higher than all the kings. of the earth. Right, now, having got that far, and before we go any further, just let me add this, that the psalm doesn't end there. And in some ways, perhaps, we all wish it did. But then, that's not life. We have a wonderful God who's come out and made himself known to a people, and how he sticks steadfastly to his loving purpose despite them. And having learned that, they want to sing of this unswerving, unfailing love that's determined to bless a people that he's taken up. They could not possibly sin themselves out of, so as to be lost forever, the mercies of the Lord. Absolutely impossible. It's the wrong word. Not his pity. This is his steadfast, determined, staying in there with them, whatever. No wonder they had a song to sing. And what we have here in verses 1 and 2 is just that, and we're going to be watching that from verse 5 on. And what I want you to notice in those verses 1 and 2, please, is this. That although he's sticking with the people, he's actually bringing in the whole universe. You'll see where we end in verse 2. Well, if you don't, you'd better look at it. It's no good looking at me. Thy faithfulness shalt thou establish in Jerusalem. Not in mine. It says in the very heavens. The whole point here is that the faithfulness of God and the steadfast, determined, covenant-keeping mercy of God is that faithfulness of a God who's flung the universe into space, commanded them all into their proper slots, and he names them, and they stand to attention there in the heavens. And this God that controls all the heavens is the one who's hymned by the people. What confidence we should have with these great unchanging lights, the covenant with the sun, we'll read of it later, the covenant with the moon, hey? These wonderful things, stable things. Well, if God's faithful in all of this, and he's the incomparable amongst all the gods, then this God is our God forever and ever. Praise his name. That's verses 1 and 2, and I can't see for the life of me how we can possibly just sit there like some of you look as if you're doing at the moment, and not even look as if I'm getting deep. I will sing of the mercies of the Lord forever, and that's how long they'll be there, and I'll be singing as long as they're there. Wonderful God, the God of the heavens, the God of nature, the God of the angelic beings, and all of them are there, glad to respond to his sovereign control, which is such a demonstration of his commitment to a people who've no real call for him, call upon him at all. And then when we've had a little look at a few parts of that, we'll get to the point that matters, and that is this. I'm going to talk to you. I like you singing. I like you coming to me. But I'm going to tell you something, and this is it. I'm not just committed to a people. I'm not just going to stay in there, whatever. I'm not going to give Ephraim up when you would have given him up centuries ago. I'm staying in there with him. But having said that, oh, I've got something more in mind than that. I've started off not simply with a nation now. I've constrained. I've actually hemmed in my purpose as far as ruling in the universe is concerned, by covenanting to David. And we'll talk about that, which is the expansion of verses 3 and 4. Just glance at that a minute, and that's about all I'll be able to say. I made a covenant with my chosen. I have sworn unto David my servant, thy seed will I establish forever, and build up thy throne to all generations. Will you notice, please, here the kind of words that get attracted to covenant almost everywhere that it occurs. You must get used to these fields of terms if you're going to get a feel for covenant truth. No doubt about it. And so we've got here the idea of making a covenant, cutting one. And you also have the idea of the oath of God on it. You'll remember that coming out in connection with Abraham, that by two things that are totally impossible to change. Number one, God makes a promise. That's enough. God makes a covenant. That's enough. God puts his oath on top of the covenant. No, that's not. And so we'll go on and he will heap words. But in Hebrews chapter 6, he makes a promise and he tops it with his oath. And neither of those are possible to change. This is the God that cannot lie. Now that we'll have to do about that. So let's have a little excerpt or two out of the hymn piece, and I'll come to the remainder of that psalm at the end, if there's time. I've got to get some time there at the end. But you'll notice here in verse 5, we said this is the cosmic proportion of God's ways with all that he's created. And even those hosts of spirits that are at his disposal or even in opposition to him. And the whole thing he has under control. And the heavens shall praise thy wonders, O Lord. Can you imagine it? The whole of the heavens there are just gazing down on this arena, and they're wondering at the interventions of God. The heavens do. And it's not simply his wonder power. Thy faithfulness, what they're reading in what he's doing, is that he can never actually be anything other than faithful to what he has said. When he put them into existence, he hadn't said anything that they knew about. But now they're there as the observers. And they see certain things happening, but before it happens, he perhaps speaks to this one or that one, and then it happens. And they say, oh, he's not only got that kind of ability to intervene in what stays there unmoved otherwise, he's not only got that ability which makes us wonder, but that's exactly what he said he was going to do. And so Abraham breathes again, or Israel comes out of Egypt, or whatever you like to think about. And the heavens are responding to this, and you're just sitting, oh dear me, I don't know. Who in the skies? We heard this in our opening prayer. He's incomparable. There's nobody in the skies that even begins to compare with him. And after all, he made the sphere in which these beings are anyway. Who among the sons of the mighty is like to the Lord? Well, there's plenty of the sons of the mighty. But if you put them all together, you couldn't get a total that begins to compare. But if you ask if there's one, forget it, you're wasting your time. You see, God, El, this is not just Elohim, it's El. This is the one that's might. Whatever he says happens. His word effects what he wants done. El, this mighty one, is greatly to be feared. And you know all these spirits, whether with him or not, they all know that. This one is greatly to be feared. And incidentally, in that verse, please, this assembly of the saints is not the morning meeting. Okay? It's got nothing to do with saints as we're talking about it. It's holy ones. These are the spirits in the heavens. We haven't even got down here yet. And all these in the councils. And how many are there? Where do we start? Where do we start in these tiers of administration? And the principalities and the powers and the mights and the dominions and the thrones? And dare I say it, 24 princes. Well, if you don't, we'll have a chat about that after, eh? He's got tiers of spirit beings controlling the universe. And if some of them have got out of line and are seeking to thwart his purpose, there's one thing that's true of all of them. He's greatly feared by every spirit being he's put into creation. And he's to be had in fear of all them that are round about him. And that's not his people either. We're up there in the court of heaven and the sons of God and all the rest of it, like Job 1 teaches us. I tell you, what a God is going to be the God of David. Why start here? Oh, I need a God this great. I need a God where every single created spirit being in the heavens is there. And if at any time there was one to thwart a purpose, he could just annihilate on the spot, or toss them into the deep, or put them in chains of darkness awaiting the judgment of the great day. Oh, Lord God of hosts. Oh, not Israel's puny little army down here. These hosts. And just one of these sent out, and that's 185,000 Assyrian soldiers less. He's the Lord God of hosts, you see. He's got all these spirit hosts at his avail, just ready at his command. Who is a mighty one like unto Yah, I ask you. And if you can give me an answer to that other than none, you're a heretic. And so he goes on. Let's get down here now. It's creation we're talking about. Well, he rules the pride of the sea, and the waves thereof arise. He stills them or he doesn't. He breaks Rahab and they're out of Egypt. That's the picture that's in Isaiah for Rahab, isn't it? He can break Pharaoh just like that. In fact, he can say, you come out against me, well, I'll harden you to make sure that you'll stay on the stage a little bit longer. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to use you as a monument to how I can control somebody that gets in my way. He scatters his enemies, whoever they are. The heavens are thine, the earth is thine. Well, what isn't his? Nothing. He's the creator of all, the providential sustainer of all, and he's the God of history. He controls every second of it, split second of it. And the north and the south and Tabor and Hermon, they're all his. North, south, east, west, it doesn't matter. Look where you look, even in the land, the bumps in it or the flat bits in it. Well, that's how he made it. Yes, he has got a mighty arm and a strong... Now, I'd better stop there, hadn't I? Because I'm not going to finish the rest if I do. But just carry that on, please, down to verse 14. And as you do, just thrill in your soul and keep on singing. Respond to a God who's made everything, in charge of everything, controls the spirit hosts, and has nature at his disposal. And he's using all this to bring about one that's higher than all the kings of the earth. That's what he's doing. He's determined before he ever started that this one would be the heir of all things, and then he made the heir of all things through him. And having said that, he'll keep on going until he inherits the all things, whether they're in the heavens or the earth. That's why we start in the heavens anyway. And we've got to get to earth before there's even a people. Creator, Redeemer, praise his name. Well, no wonder then, verses 15 through 18. Blessed is the people that know the joyful sound. I say they are. Wow. They're up at the festival and the trumpet's going. Oh, watch this. It's the day of release. This is wonderful. Creation's now being brought to the point where at last it can really rejoice. We were talking about it last night. We have trees clapping their hands. Ah, now blessed is the people that knows this God. Because if he said that's what's going to happen, one thing for certain, it'll happen all right. A God this great. Ah, but a God who's given his people a joyful sound because he's revealed himself to be that. Not simply to them, but in charge of everything. And these people will not only be singing, I tell you, they'll be walking. And when they walk, they'll be walking with the smile and sunshine of his face on them. Lovely that. They looked unto him and they were lightened. Just like that. They walk and they thrill him as they walk in the light of his countenance. They rejoice all the day in his name. Which name? That name, this name, that... Join all the glorious names. These are just little tiny corners of expression of a God who's given himself all these names so that we can begin to touch the hem of his garment. Wonderful, isn't it? in thy righteousness they shall be exalted. Who could possibly conceive modern day Israel just going into the kingdom of the Messiah? Forget it. And my, when they do go into it, there won't be any quarrelling about who's going to control Jericho, the Gaza Strip, or whatever either. This God in faithfulness has given them the boundaries. We'll come to that in a minute. In thy favour, this is all of God's grace for Israel. They'll never get in there on law anyway. They'll come in on grace. In thy favour, our horn, this mighty warrior king that's coming, our horn, shall be exalted. Wonderful day. And those few verses, 15 to 18, get us to the bridge. And now what we're going to do is to start picking up verses 3 and 4 back there, because we're linking out of what he is to the universe, to the spirit hosts around it, to the surfaces of it, to his interventions down here on terra firma. We've had that. He's in charge of it all. But now we've got another wonderful thing. We're coming over. Then thou spakest in vision to thy Holy One, and saidst, I have laid help upon one that is mighty. I have exalted one chosen out of the people. I have found David, my servant. With my holy oil have I anointed him, with whom my hand shall be established. Mine arm also shall strengthen him. This is wonderful. Can you imagine a God that is this great and is in control of such a vast sphere, the whole of creation, including those black holes that they haven't got any light into yet? You know, he's in charge of all of it. He controls all of it. There's not a corner of it that he can't even see, even if it's a black hole to you. But that God has actually chosen a man, and his name is David. And it's going to be of his seed that the one shall sit on the throne who will be higher than all the kings of the earth. No question. So now we're on to verses 3 and 4. And the fulfillment, really, not in a hymn, but in a hymn-like oracle, some of the data that was given about David, or to David, in 2 Samuel chapter 7. We've read a little bit of it already. The holy oil went on him. Well, that was before ever 2 Samuel was written. But here he is anointed. And with his own hand he's going to establish him. And his arm's going to strengthen him. You know, in the future it says that the weakest in the first skirmish about Jerusalem, the weakest is going to be like David. And I tell you, everybody got trouble when David was around and feeling that he had to go to war. Aye, but those of David's house, and these are the same sort of chaps, really. Those people, they're going to be like the angel of the Lord. Now, you don't want to pick a fight with people like that. You're going to lose for certain. But the secret of their strength is mine arm. That's it. With an outstretched arm, he brought them out of Egypt. And there wasn't one living soldier that came out in the chariotry of Pharaoh. There wasn't one of them left to live. And their carcasses over on the other side, washed up on the shore, were a monument to the mighty power of God when enemies come in. And here they are. The enemy shall not exact upon him. What was true back there in Egypt is going to be true for David. And it was. But David's only a little tiny picture. He's the beginning of God's determined purpose that the seed of David, in fact, should inherit and should sit upon the throne of his father David, as Luke 1 describes it to us. So you'll notice, it wasn't David after all, and yet it was. And here was David beating down, and it says, I beat down. But that's it, you see. It was the strength of his arm that was actually using David's arm, and his purpose was effected. And a wonderful extension of the boundaries of the land began to emerge before the people. And you know, there are some folk in Israel that talk today about Eretz Israel. They talk about the land of Israel. It's ours. They haven't even begun to think what the land of Israel is. Joshua didn't get them to it. I'm not talking about the fact that he went through and got all of this by conquering it, and it says, well, he didn't take that, and they didn't quite manage this, and of course they failed to get rid of that pocket, and so on and so forth. I'm not talking about those little bits. What I'm talking about is this. They stopped far too short. There wouldn't have been a problem if they'd kept going, and they'd need more cities of refuge than three on each side. And they said, there'll be an extension when you get the rest of the land. The six were for the poverty of their understanding of what God had given them. That was the problem. But get up there into Lebanon. Says Sharon, yes, we will. And he went up there, peace for Galilee. And where did he stop? Dear me, just over Beirut. Sure, should have kept going, you know, Tripoli. Keep going, lad. And come across in the Bekaa Valley. And cut across into Syria and get up to the Euphrates. Oh, that sounds more like David now. And David took it. There wasn't an enemy there that actually withstood him. They either capitulated and said, we'll be on your side like Hiram of Tyre. Or they lost. It was one of the two options. They either became his friend or they were flattened. Right, well, it's going to be like that with great David's greater son when he comes back. You're either going to be on his side or you won't stand a hope. And the one who came here to save is the one who's coming back to take over. And when he does, it will be in mighty judgment. Now, just a few things there. Verse 24. And here are these words, covenant words. This is, I forget exactly the phrase, but I like the word twin that was used of this. These are a pair of, they're not identical twins, but you can never get them apart when you're talking about the covenant. Watch the whole range of the covenant field of words. This is the way to learn and to keep yourselves from covenant theology and all its error. There are not three covenants, one made between father and son before the foundation. Never heard of it. Not in the Bible, so I'm not starting with it. That's speculative. Number two, there wasn't a covenant of works made with Adam in the garden, because the word covenant is not connected with Adam, and I take into consideration there Malachi chapter 2, which some people think suggests it. There is no covenant with Adam. Finish. So tell us about the covenant. First one, Noah, sun, moon, the seasons. We've got it in this piece. Before we end this psalm, we'll have it. He's committed to that one too. But here we've got the covenant with David. And this isn't a covenant now that's been achieved and is already being enjoyed by a Christ that's crowned on the throne in heaven. He's coming back. He's sharing his father's throne at the moment. He's going to come back and sit on the throne of his father David. That's the point. And these covenant... Oh dear, anyway, we mustn't get off onto that. Let's stick with something useful. Verse 24. But my faithfulness and my... Watch those words. Here we are again. Faithfulness and mercy. Watch them. Faithfulness and truth. Faithfulness and mercy. You can keep on going with these. Swearing. There's lots of words. Watch all of those. And what are they saying to us? You can absolutely rely, if God puts himself to the point where he says to a man, I am going to do this for you. He doesn't need to say any more. That's the guarantee he's going to do it. And you say, well, I've been living for a few years now and I've been very naughty. I've actually sinned. I've got myself out of the... I've lost the sunshine out of my life. I'm no longer in the benefit. In fact, even my bones are groaning now. And there's something about my health. I'm deteriorating in health all the time. That's right, the 1 Corinthians 11 syndrome. You know, some are weak and some are sickly and some even sleep among you, eh? And this is David I'm talking about. Perhaps you'd like Psalm 32. Or maybe Psalm 51. And when this man with whom he's made this covenant here, and he's done it in faithfulness, has now so sinned, that doesn't put the covenant or the faithful word of the Lord in any jeopardy whatsoever. You see what it says there? It's faithfulness and my mercy. That's the point. That's that word again. Mercy. That steadfast, determined, unchanging love that will achieve the objects of its heart's desire, whatever. And David will be there to rejoice with Abram, Isaac and Jacob and sit down at the messianic banquet in the millennium. Wonderful day. Wonderful day. Time's going. Well, you must keep going on this now. I'm just throwing a few seeds out. I will set his hand also in the sea, Mediterranean, and his right hand on the rivers. Well, now there are those, and it's quite right in Hebrew, you can have a plural of majesty, which means the river of all the rivers, in which case that is a way of describing the Euphrates, because it is the river. On the other hand, it could be the rivers and its tributaries plus the Tigris. And what he could be saying to us here is he's got his hand on the sea here, and over there his hand on the rivers of Mesopotamia. Now this is the promise to David, right through to the Mediterranean, in fact down to the Brook of Egypt, and right up here as far as the beginnings of the Fertile Crescent. And he's got his hand on both, like this. And I don't know anyone in Israel that thinks that that's the terms of reference when they're talking about Eretz Israel. I don't understand it. I mean, they're generally very ambitious. Too ambitious by far. But all they're talking about is getting a little bit that's been occupied within a very tiny strip of what God has promised to them, if they're in the right with him. And when this comes about and he's got his hand and his hand, who's got hands that far apart? Who can actually put his hand like that? Well, this is the Lord that's talking, but it is the Lord incarnate. And this is where we come. I will make him my firstborn. You know, every one of David's line was anointed with oil. But there was one that was anointed with the oil of gladness above his brethren. I take it's the kings here. There wasn't a king in that line that wasn't anointed. And they rejoiced when they were. But he is one that was anointed with the oil of gladness, and he made these fellows look as if it was the oil of sadness for them. Above his brethren. He's the firstborn. And the firstborn gets the top place. He is dad's next generation of the father's house. The second born, third born, however many, they're just down the line. This is dad and his authority still continuing with us, the firstborn. This is what we have here. Christ, after the flesh, according to the seed of David. That's going right back there. But this one, not Solomon, this one is the firstborn. And he, in fact, is the guarantor of the father's line, the father's house, the promise to David given in 2 Samuel chapter 7 and established here yet again. 28, my mercy will I keep for him. Here we are again, you see, you can't talk about covenant in splendid isolation. My mercy and my covenant shall stand fast with him. My seed also will I make to endure forever. Well, that's wonderful. And of course, we know that that's guaranteed, and it's guaranteed in Christ. And the next little bit's a bit sad. It talks about what will happen if David's actual children after the flesh don't behave themselves. And we know that this was perfectly true. But his faithfulness, God's, he will not suffer to fail if these have been unfaithful in that royal house. And there's not been a king since that whole group were swept away into Babylon. In 587, 586, there's never been a king on the throne that is in this line. But there's going to be, for certain. And the firstborn is on his father's throne in heaven, waiting the signal. Verse 35, please. Once have I sworn by my holiness, I will not lie unto David, his seed shall endure forever. And his throne, here we are. Here we are, as the sun before me. It shall be established forever. This is why we had to start where we did. The God of creation, the God of the cosmos, is the God who's committed to a king and a house. And when that king's installed here, he'll be the king of all the kings and the lord of all those who exercise lordship. And the faithful witnesses in the sky are telling us all the time. He's put them up there. They've never changed. And they'll stay put until there's a new heavens and a new earth after the millennial reign, wherein dwelleth righteousness. Praise you. Now that's a very brief start. So what we've got now, a hymn. What a wonderful God. The God of the cosmos. What a wonderful covenant keeper. And here he speaks about his determined purpose for David and this one who's to be higher than all the kings of the earth. Verse 38, but. Now, I want you really to feel that. But. We've got a God that controls it all. We've got a God who's spoken and he must keep his word. But how come we're in this state? And if I was over in Israel today and I started talking to some of these people whose ears I was trying to catch, and I said, you know, you've got a wonderful God. The God of Abram, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, or whatever. The living God, he's not the God of the dead, you know. And we start talking like that. And in the end we say, well, but how come it's like this? Oh, where'd you fit the Holocaust in? Oh, those terrible Germans. Well, what about the Crusaders? Oh, those desperate Catholics. Oh, what have you? And they go through history, and we don't come out very well because we're identified with a whole pile of folk who were bearing the name of Christ in some way or another and have actually been more anti-Semitic probably than most others. But having said that, I always try to get him past that and say to him, you know, what's God saying to you? Don't you believe you've got a God that controls all of that up there? And all these hosts around here? And gets the sun to shine on you here? Don't you believe that? And when the rains come, he sent them. Yeah, of course we do. Well, how come he didn't have any control on Hitler? Or those fellows at the Inquisition who even call themselves Christians, you know. What do you think about that? But there's all these promises, and there's a man installed on the throne in heaven, and he's got the marks of Calvary. Him being delivered up by the determinate counsel you Jews have taken, and by the wicked instrumentality of these lawless men, the Romans, you had him crucified and slain. That's what you did. I got an outstanding account. And when your maskilim are raised up and they start talking Psalm 32 as the first of the maskil psalms and say, blessed is the man. Oh, that's lovely. Which man's this? The man whose sins, whose transgressions have been taken away. When they're brought to be broken and look upon the hands, the pierced hands of the one who's coming. When they look upon him whom they pierced, they'll mourn, you know. And then they'll start to sing Isaiah 53 like you never could. We've got it at last. He was wounded for our transgressions. That's it. Wonderful day. But he isn't yet, you see. But thou hast cast off and rejected. And an enemy's come into the land, and we're not out of it yet. We haven't been taken away. This is a real bit of history, I think, around Rehoboam's time, if we've got the title right at the beginning. I'm talking about Solomon's son. And when that kingdom was divided, and that's 10 of it gone already, and they're going to build a golden calf up there, and they'll be right away from me. And apostasy, and eventually they'll be, before they're ever out of the land, any of them. There's poor old Rehoboam, with just a little tiny bit. And now Shishak of Egypt has come up as well. and he stripped the land. Oh, I don't like the sound of this at all. But, that's right. Well, how come, if this God's on the throne of everything, and he's committed himself to David, and I happen to be one of the David line, how come, please? And it's sin. It's rejection of what God has laid down for them. They want to go their own way, and their own way they'll go, until they come to something like verse 40. And that's the last little bit. And that is, not but things are not what they ought to be. Why? How long, O Lord, wilt thou hide thyself forever? Shall thy wrath burn like a fire? What man is he that liveth and shall not see death? Shall he deliver his soul from the hand of the grave? Lord, where are thy former loving kindness, thy mercies? Tell us which thou swearest unto David. How long? How long? You can hear some of that from those under the altar that will die in the period that's ahead. And in that long 7 years, there's going to be lots of martyrs. And there'll be those of the souls under, they say, how long? How long? Well, how long, my brother? I can't tell you when it's going to happen, except that I feel it's nearer now. And that's not really been terribly helpful, I know. It's nearer now than it ever was. Well, of course, it's bound to it. History's just moving through, isn't it? But having said that, you know what I mean. We're getting nearer and nearer. And when we get there, at the end, blessed be the Lord forevermore. Amen and amen. Why are they like that? Because the prayers of David have been realized. And this one who's the higher than all the kings of the earth, great David's greatest son, is going to come out of heaven, sit on the throne, and administer the universe in righteousness and justice for 1,000 years. The widow, the poor, the tiny little child. My, even creation will have got it right. And the wolf and the lamb, and the lion and the bear. And you'll be just smoothing him and saying, well, you know, this takes me right back to Genesis chapter 2 when he said, when he smoothed your mane like this, you're a lion. All of creation's groans are going to go. And the trees will be clapping their hands in the happy day when that how long plea will have got through to the throne, which had, the heavens had been as brass for so long. And he'll come out and rescue them and be here in the highest place. Not that heaven affords. The highest place that earth and heaven affords will be represented in him.